Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, you hockey puck. Let's get this started. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another edition of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode of this hour-long, whatever you want to call it. Episode 49, as we once again march proudly toward number 52, which will mark the first year of the podcast, the Captain Podtastic podcast. Just wanted to once again thank radio, I don't know, legend, you want to call him, Kevin Matthews. Took some time out last week to talk to us about a variety of subjects. I also had fun having Jimmy Shorts talk to Ronnie, which was very nice. Oh, it was fun. And so thanks a lot, Kevin. I appreciate taking the time. And we wish him the best as he continues a very brave fight with multiple sclerosis. But he is still very positive and moving forward. And that's the kind of Kev Head that we all know and love. So thanks a lot, Kevin. Speaking of Kevins, I've got Kevin Richter with me today. How are you doing, sir?
Hanging in there. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Right. It is an interesting time here in the in the city of Chicago, if you're a sports fan. By the time this podcast is posted, I don't know if the Blackhawks will still be in the playoffs. I don't know if the Bulls are going to win the NBA championship. And I don't know if the Cubs are going to be in last place. So I don't know what's going on. But as we stand here on recording day, which is Wednesday, November 19th, the Blackhawks are down 3-0 in their playoff against the the Nashville Predators. And Kevin here, producer, is a big hockey fan, as am I. And I was just saying to him before we started the podcast today, last week, they were just beginning the playoffs. And, you know, we are all pounding our chest, you know, amongst ourselves here in the in the studio. Oh, yeah, well, it'll be a close series, but, I mean, you know, probably Hawks in 6, maybe 5.
Right.
You know, who knows? You know, they're bound to win a couple of games. And, wow, I mean, nobody expected the Hawks not even to show up for the first 2 games and maybe wake up a tad for maybe a period and a half in the last game. The problem is that they played 4 periods. So a period and a half in the last game, that game 3, doesn't really cover it when you paid 3.5 periods, almost 4. And Nashville scored with, 3 minutes to go in that first overtime. So we will see. As I said, by the time we talk, either the Hawks, I don't know. When this airs, let's say miracles happen.
Yeah.
Will they be still playing into this week?
Let's see.
So they have to be
game 4.
They would have to.
I'll pull up the schedule here real quick.
7 has to fall into
I'm sure it would. Yeah.
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 With travel and days off, I would think so. Maybe even today that this airs, or is posted, I should say, might even be a possible game 7. I don't know. I think maybe. But wow, what a shocker! And the Cubs are having their problems. They're certainly nothing to go crazy about. It is literally the first week and a half of the season. But, you know, they've already lost 7 games, and I think they didn't lose 7 games until, like, the 30th game of the year. Weren't they, like, 25-6?
This time last year?
I think they went on some crazy run. I don't know if it was right at the beginning of the season, but at one point they were, like, 25-6. That may have been their record. It was outrageous.
I remember, and then the Sox last year were
starting. Yeah, at the beginning,
really
they both started.
Plumbing.
Yeah, so I mean, both teams have come down to reality to some extent. The Blackhawks have become way down. But as I said, no one would have ever expected the lowly Bulls, who made the playoffs on literally the last day of the season. At this point, as I'm speaking, they are dominating the Celtics and have a chance to win that series.
They stole the Hawks' mojo.
Yeah. I mean, 2 weeks ago, everybody was talking about how the Bulls were going to miss the playoffs and at least get a high draft pick. Now we're talking about in the next round, and where's the Bulls bandwagon? Wow. I would not have expected the Chicago Bulls to have been the sole guiding light in spring in Chicago sports. But they are.
Here we are.
Yeah. And now no one knows anybody. Nobody has paid attention to the Bulls all season. And now all of a sudden, oh, Jimmy Butler's fantastic. Okay, whatever. Anyway, I just had to bring that up because it is kind of shocking if you're a sports fan. But like I said, when this airs, who knows? We may be so excited about the Blackhawks' comeback or very depressed at their very quick elimination, which will have been 2 years in a row. And if that is the case, being a Blackhawks fan as well as a hockey fan, I would be very impressed, or not impressed, I'd be very interested to see what the Blackhawks brass does in terms of roster and perhaps front office. I understand that the team has won, they won impressive 50 games in the season and came from behind to win the division. Very impressive in the last month and a half of the season. And they have led the division in the last several years. But if you get knocked out in the first round by inferior teams, not bad teams, everybody who makes the playoffs is a good team, but inferior to the quality of the Blackhawks, if you get knocked out, whether it's in seven games like last year or potentially a sweep, this year, somebody has to pay the price, and it'll be interesting to see what they do. Or do they say, you know what, we maybe we need to build a team that does well in the season, good enough to make the playoffs, but maybe is built better as a playoff team as opposed to a regular season team. And by that I mean the regular season in hockey is a much different game. It's a much more wide-open game. There's a lot more penalties called. It's a different game. When the playoffs come, the referees let a little more things go because they don't want to get people shorthanded. The game is tougher. It's more defensive. There's no 5 or 6 goal games. It's mostly 3-2, 2-1, 1-0. Defense and Kevin before the show talked about puck luck, if you will, the way a puck bounces. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Sometimes that is the way you win a game. Mm-hmm. On a deflected puck or on a crazy bounce. How about that bounce that the Blackhawks had where the puck...
Almost.
Where they dumped it in, went right through the crease.
What a save that was.
Yeah. Their goalie, Pecorini, whatever his name is. What's his name?
Pecorini.
He needed every inch of his 6'5" frame. And now he was literally out of the goal. The puck went and ricocheted, and he had to knock it out with his stick. That's but incredible. My point is, in the playoffs, every shot counts because the game is played differently, and perhaps the Blackhawks need to build a team that is more configured for playoff hockey as opposed to regular season hockey. Maybe they need that big enforcer. Maybe they need that big guy that just plants himself in front of the net and causes disruption and screens and tips shots. We hear that every year. Oh, they're not causing enough commotion in the front, and then someone steps up. But they've lost, that was what Andrew Shaw used to do. That's what Bufflin used to do. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that when I'm talking to you today that we are excited about the Blackhawks' comeback. But if not, it will be interesting to see what happens. So what are we talking about here today? I've got a couple of topics here. As usual, very Elton Jim-centric. Where else are you going to have someone talk about, for instance, yes, you can talk about Donald Trump, or we could talk about all the things that are going on in the news, but everybody talks about that. I try to do stuff here that you say, you know what? Amidst all the craziness that's going on and all the other things, Elton Jim's talking about what? But that's hopefully what brings you back every week. So my wife and I, we went out to some restaurant where they have fast food kind of thing. A sit-down place, though. And I'm not sure. I think I ordered a salad, right? And so I got a salad. And I look at the utensils that are thrown in the bag. And I find a utensil that seems to be unique just to the plastic utensil world. Not the steel or iron, whatever they make. I don't know what they make forks and spoons and knives out of. Some kind of metal. But what I don't see a metal one of these, and I always see a plastic or a plastic one of these. And by that I mean the spork. Now you say, what the heck's a spork? If you ever notice, there, and sometimes when you go to the restaurant, to a fast food restaurant, or even in the prepackaged little thing they give you, there's this spoon with fork-like edges on it. Thus, a spork, a spoon, and a fork. Now, it's always been there, and you've always seen it, and it's something to eat your coleslaw with, or your salad, or something like that. But you always see it with just in a plastic version. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm using my spork, and as I'm using it for this salad, it's perfect because the salad had, you know, not only lettuce, but it had tomatoes, and it had some cheese, and it had some other kinds of meats, and it had some stuff, you know, some loose things that needed to be scooped as well as stabbed in the eating of my salad. And I'm saying, wow, I'm really digging the spork. So then I'm thinking, how many times, especially if you have any kind of a rice-based meal, say you get some Chinese food, right? And you've got chicken fried rice or beef fried rice, or you've got, you know, a beef fried rice and also an order of beef and pea pods. How many times, okay, if you're going to eat the beef and pea pods, you have to have a fork. But if you want a little rice along with the beef and pea pods, then you start doing this balancing act. And you have to use your hands, too, sometimes, to get the rice onto the fork. And inevitably, what do you do first? You have to get the rice on the fork first, and you balance that, and then you stab at the meat, which what happens? Then the rice falls off. So now I've got like just remnants of my pile of rice, and I've got my meat and pea pod stuck on my fork, but I want to go back for my rice. Well, now to get my rice back, I've got meat and pea pod stuck on the front of my fork, which means it's going to be harder for me to scoop the rice again. So maybe I have to go and take the meat off my fork and try it again. Or just eat the first thing, and then before I'm done, scoop some rice. But now I'm chewing already. I want one nice taste experience of the rice and the pea pod and the beef. And I'll be honest with you, the only utensil that provides that blend is the spork. Any kind of rice-based dish with any kind of meat or tomato or something in it, you got to go with a spork. Let me give you another example. A nice hearty soup with vegetables or meat in it, certainly the spoon will put the meat and everything on there. But a lot of times the meat takes up the whole spoon. So you don't get much broth. It's all meat. So then you go in for another dive of all broth. But once again, the goal, if I'm cooking this, my goal is I want you to take your spoon and I want you to have some broth and a little vegetable and maybe a little piece of chicken or something. With the spoon, unless you have a giant spoon, I think you're going to have to sacrifice again your taste experience. Think of my Jewish friends out there. Think of this. Okay, I'm eating the matzo ball. You got this giant matzo ball. Okay, the matzo ball is this big ball of like dough in a chicken broth. You literally cut it with your utensil and put it on your spoon, and then you get some broth. Well, once again, if you cut it off, you get too big of a piece. The matzo ball takes up the whole thing. You get a soggy matzo ball, and then you go in for a follow-up, for a soup chaser. I would think the goal is it's matzo ball soup. It's all one word, matzo ball soup. It's all one title. You want the broth and the thing. If I'm eating matzo ball soup, I guarantee you, if I have my spork, I cut it with my spork, I spoon away with my broth, and I stab my matzo ball. If I'm having chicken soup, I spoon my broth, and I stab my piece of chicken and my carrot or my celery. Boom. One motion, one taste, one hell of a bite. So let me tell you, I was like, I'm on a spork mission. I was eating. I said, I want a spork. But I want it in my utensil drawer. I don't want to be at my house with plastic utensils like I'm in fourth grade. So I said, let me go on the internet. So I go on the internet, hit spork. Sure enough, spork comes up. Hit SPO and it came up. I look, Crate and Barrel has a spork. Several other sporks. Now, the funny thing is, I'm looking at different sporks. There are different designs of sporks. Now, my design, that the spork that I want needs to have equal spikes of fork with a good area of spa, not just ork. I want spa. So a lot of these had a lot of orks, but not a lot of spas, meaning the spoon part was very small. It was almost like a glorified fork. It wasn't a spork. A spork needs 50-50. The word is 50-50. Spa, spoon, ork, fork, spork. 50-50 word, 50-50 design. Some had these long, fork-like things, very small area for the spoon. No, because the key is you want that spooning ability, and you want that to stay on there. Even after you spoon, you still have to stab. So you want a nice area of spooning ability. So I looked around, and sure enough, it looked like the Crate and Barrel spork was the one for me. All right, so we're off to the Crate and Barrel for a spork. I saw it online. Now, I haven't been to Crate and Barrel in years because I haven't been married in 25 years, so why would a guy go to Crate and Barrel unless he's registered for his wedding? And it was funny to go back to Crate and Barrel and those kind of places because you just do see all the newlyweds. And they're walking around, and a lot of times it's young women with their friends, and sometimes it is the couple. In fact, I overheard one couple, and you could tell that she wanted a higher priced something, and he was like, "Yeah, but," and she's like, "Yeah, but," and then okay, it's like, man, when it's the wedding time, women take advantage, because the guy... Now, Kevin, you've just been recently married, right?
Just over 6 months ago.
Oh my god, 6 months! Yeah, wow. So you're still in the I'm 26 years, so forget about me. But you are right in the sweet spot of you still are going, whatever you want, dear.
Yeah,
believe me.
Yeah,
25 years, you go, no, we're not doing that. But right now, even though it's wrong and you go, okay. And I don't blame you. Nothing wrong with that. Because you want to get to 26. Mm-hmm. That's your goal. And if you act like you've been married for 26 years when you're only married 6 months, you're never going to get to 26.
Makes sense.
So a word of the wise. But yeah, it was just so funny just to see the couples or the girlfriends going out there and picking the stuff. So I'm, you know, we go to the silverware section, and I am not seeing a spork. And now I am very upset because it's online, and he even said it's on sale. And I'm like, oh, fantastic. Not only am I going to get a spork, I'm going to get a spork for less. I'm going to get 20% off my sporks. So I'm looking around, we go, we've got all these different, you know, because a lot of them, where we were at, you know, they had a few little individual ones, but then mostly they were all settings. And clearly, once again, the spork, bad PR, the spork is not there. There's the sharp knife, the butter knife, the spoon, the fork, the salad spoon, the soup spoon, regular spoon, no spork. So I'm like, they've got to have them. Now, I am usually someone, if I see a salesperson, I run as far away from a salesperson. Maybe it's stupid. I would rather look for something for 35 minutes than take 2 minutes to go, could you help me, and have the person walk me right over there. I don't know why. I'm afraid of the hard sell. I'm afraid of then they get attached to you like a barnacle. What else can I help you with? Oh, that looks good on you. When I go shopping, I have a list. I don't call what I do shopping. I call myself gathering. I am a gatherer. I do not shop. Shopping to me, the definition of shopping is browsing and looking, and I don't browse. I have a list. It says I need black pepper. That means I go right to the black pepper aisle. I grab the black pepper, and I don't say, oh, there's a white pepper there. I wonder what white pepper. I don't care what white pepper is. My list doesn't say white pepper. I get black pepper, and we're off to the next aisle. I get out of the grocery store in 15 minutes. My wife says she's going to the grocery store. I don't expect her back for 3 hours. I'll be back in 15 minutes. So we go. So I went with my wife. So we go to the thing, and we're looking around. And this was the odd thing. I was so into this spork. And we made a specific trip to get this spork. It wasn't just, by the way, here's a Crate and Barrel. It's like, no. We're going to Crate and Barrel to buy a spork. That I don't want to leave this one to chance. So while my wife is doing what I usually do, walking around any possible section that might have a utensil, I must have had this look on my face of complete, just a lost look. And so this salesperson comes up. He says, can I help you? And I usually go, no, I'm fine. For whatever reason, I was so spork-focused, I said, yes, you can help me. I surprised myself. I think she was surprised that I said yes. I think she was throwing me an obligatory, can I help you? And I must have had and she probably figured, well, this guy's going to say no. And I said yes, and I think she actually got afraid. She was running away from me. I was almost grabbing, hey, come back here, I do need your help. So I said, yeah. I need a spork. To which she looked at me quizzically and said, what? I said, I need a spork. You know, half spoon, half fork, spork. And so she looks at me like I'm out of my mind. And then she sort of looks around and she goes, well, I don't even know if we have those. And I said, well, when online, you have them. I said, unfortunately, they're not in the area, you know. Where they would seem to be. She says, well, let me see. So she goes, you know, it's amazing now the way you can check out at a store. I mean, the idea of a cash register at many places now, you know, there's still the cash register, but not at Crate and Barrel. My God. I mean, she pulls out her little handheld device and boop, boop, boop. And she goes, sure enough, we do have them. So, of course, she goes to the spot where my wife and I already have been. And I said, you know, we looked around. It's not there. She's like, well, let me get my walkie-talkie, and let me see. It says we have them. So I don't know. Maybe they're in the back. So now her walkie-talkie doesn't work. So now we've got to find someone else's walkie-talkie that works. And I can't even believe my patience, because usually I would be out of the store. But I am so spork-intense right now that I am not leaving this store without a spork. So I'm even putting up with this stuff of I have to find someone with a walkie-talkie that works. So she finds another associate, if you will, And she says, she shows her the thing. Do we have the, I mean, I think we got a call in the back, these sporks? The woman goes, oh, well, they're over here. Oh, she's like Moses. She led us to the promised land. I was over here in bondage with the Pharaoh. She didn't know where, what a spork was and if they had him. And then here was my Moses leading me out of bondage of a life with no sporks and leading me to the light of a spork. And so I followed her, and she actually split the Red Sea of dishes and placemats. And there it was. So she goes, here they are. And there they were. And this woman, the woman that, you know, was our original, she came and she goes, well, there they are. And I'm like, whoa, let's go. They only had six sporks. Took all of them. Six sporks. I wanted eight. She goes, how many do you want? I said, well, I'd like eight. Because I figured one a day, seven. My wife might want a spork a day or so. That we need at least eight. Only had six. I didn't want to wait for them to go to the back for two sporks. So I said, okay, well, you know what? Let's just get two. We'll take all your sporks. And then if we like using the spork, we'll come back for more. So we got six sporks. They were on sale, which was nice. And so the woman's like, so now these are called what? And I said, sporks. And in fact, if you know Crate and Barrel, they usually have like a little piece of explanation thing right next to it, all the prices of everything on the shelf. And sure enough, it said spork, $5.95. I go, here it is. It says spork. So now I'm having fun with the lady. And I said, well, while I'm here, do you have any norks? And she's like, I said, do you have any norfs? And she's, so now she looks at me like I'm crazy. She goes, what are you talking about? I said, you know, I mean a nork. I mean a knife and a fork. It's a norf. It's a nork. Or do you have a knife and a spoon? It's a norf. It's a noof or a norf. And so she's like, no. Or a spife. Any spifes? Got a spife? Spoon and a knife? So I had a little fun with her. And she was laughing. Talk about, we didn't even go to a checkout. She checked us out right in the aisle with her little handheld device. Beep, beep, beep. I signed with my finger, and I'm out of the place with my sporks. So we get the sporks, and I say, okay, we're spork ready. Now the key question when you get home is, what's the big deal? Where do I put my sporks? Do I put my sporks in the spoon section? Because we have one of those Rubbermaid, you know, things that everything has a shape. Because on its face, the spork does have more of a shape of a spoon than a fork. It's got the rounded part. So the spork fits into the spoon section. Because the knife section is very straight, because it's a knife, or I mean a fork, very straight, as opposed to the rounded part of the spoon in that kitchen, you know, that Rubbermaid kind of thing that you put in your drawer to keep your utensils, individual. So the question now is, do we put the spork in the soup spoon, which is the bigger spoon section, the regular spoon, or the knife? I right away veto the knife. Or, I mean, the fork, because I'd say, well, I think it needs to go into the spoon one. So it's the question of the big spoon, the small spoon. So we initially put it in the small spoon one. Now, I was very aware that we had a spork. I still question my wife's, how much she was on board with the spork. She pretended like she was very spork interested. But then the key comes in not what you say, but what you do. So the next night, we were eating, and she had a different meal than I had. And her meal was spork ready. It was a rice dish with chicken. It was spork ready. Mine was not. I had some kind of veggie burger thing. So mine was not spork at all. So I didn't say anything. I'm like, okay, let's see what she pulls out of the drawer. And she begins to eat. And I wait until we're about halfway done so that she can't even make any excuse. And when I make the comment, I look at her. I'm watching her from the beginning. And she is using a fork. She is not using a spork. So I wait for about half the meal because I don't want her. I don't want you to then have any spork guilt and go back after two bites. Oh, wait, I'll try the spork. No, no, no. I want to see what your behavior is, and you didn't go for the spork. Okay? So you told me you were very pro-spork, but I'm not seeing it. So I said, oh, so you didn't go with the spork. Oh, my God, I forgot the spork. I'm like, you are clearly not into the spork. She's like, no, I am. I'm into the spork. I just forgot. I said, well, I don't see how you would have forgotten, because when you open up the thing, the spork's on the top. So, fine. So now, next meal, we both sporked. And I have to say that I love the spork. And it's actually, and it's a nice design spork that we got from Crate and Barrel. I'm not plugging Crate and Barrel for any reason. It's just that was the one I really liked. To the point where I am on a spork. I'm out now to promote the spork. So my wife and I, for Easter, we hosted Easter. And at the table, a knife and a spork. No spoons and no forks. Just one side of the plate with a knife, other side with a spork. And we are now going to have to get the family into use to seeing and using the spork. What was funny was they didn't even comment. Until I pointed out, I said, do you notice you have a spork? I would have thought they would have said, oh, because how often do you see a spork aside from a fast food place? So I was a little disappointed. I was ready to go into my whole spork story, and I was kind of diffused. So I was a little disappointed in that. But what I have noticed is that, and I must admit, that even myself, a lot of times over the last week or so that we've been now spork, or we are now a spork family. I have not reached initially for the spork because you're used to when you're thinking stabbing for food, you think of a fork. I mean, come on. I mean, I've been conditioned my whole life. So I made a unilateral decision. In fact, just today, I took the sporks out of the big spoon holder, and much to my happiness, the spork fit into the fork slot. So now the spork is on top of the real forks. And there's six of them there. So unless someone wants to really use a fork and dig down past six sporks, they're going to use the spork. So I want to see now, because at the end of the day, you could still use your spork as a fork. That's the beauty of the spork, is that you can use the spork as a sole. Maybe you're not scooping. You can still use it to stamp. So that's what's great about it. It's multi-use. You can use the spork. Now, I must say, to use the spork, if you're just having a spoonable thing like a soup, you might not want to use the spork because of the ridges. I've already seen it. Depending on how you hold the spork, your broth will fall out because of the openings with the. So you have to learn how to use a spork. You have to tilt it a certain way so that your scoopable, especially your liquid, stays on the spork while you're stabbing with your fork. But I am now putting the fork or the spork in the fork holder so I can begin to myself as well as my wife. We can begin to. Immediately reach for and use the spork. So once again, if you are stabbing or you are scooping, no need for two utensils anymore. It's one, and it's the spork. And welcome back here to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. So I was scanning social media. I saw recently Mark Zuckerberg had one of those things. When the tech guys stand up in front of the big screen with their deck, if you will, and they talk about their new products. It started with Steve Jobs. He used to wear the black turtleneck and the jeans, and he sort of made an art out of it when they would show the new iPhone, iPad, iThis, iThat, oy vey, whatever it was. I'm really, what I'm finding, it's really funny what's happening. There used to be really cool innovations, and now Mark Zuckerberg today, talking about Facebook, was talking about all the new avatars you can have and 3D stickers. What am I, 7? You don't need to use words anymore. You can use pictures and photos and stickers and your avatar. And I'm like, and a couple of months ago, Tim Cook from Apple came out. And everybody's, drum roll, how is Apple going to shake up the world again? And their big shakeup was, we've got 20 new emojis. That's fine if I'm a 14-year-old girl. What else are you doing for me here? We've got new avatars and new 3D stickers? What am I, 8? Wow. I mean, I've always said that ultimately, and this is no cut, this is nothing, I'm not saying this in a bad way, but ultimately, most technology, especially phone-related, iPhone-related technology now, and even from the beginning, is all really based on what a 14-year-old girl finds interesting. Because that's who's driving this. Adults have adopted. The irony is when there used to be a time when 14-year-old girls and boys used to want to grow up to be adults. Now, 30 and 40 and 50-year-old adults want to degress to become 14-year-old girls by using emojis and avatars and all this other stuff and, Snapchats and disc chats and Instagrams and all that. Let's face it, the average app on a phone that most people use, whether it's texting or selfies or Instagram or Snapchat, are all geared towards teenage girls. Look what I'm wearing. Look at me. Who's Susie dating? You text. Where are you at? Are you having more fun than I am? That's all based on what 14-year-old girls do. So anyway, I bring this up because I was paging through Facebook, and I noticed that April 10th was National Siblings Day. And so while I'm scrolling around on Facebook on National Siblings Day, I noticed that everybody's got pictures with their siblings, and here's Uncle Tom, here's Frank and Tom, and oh my gosh, my buddies, my friends, you're the greatest sister, you're the greatest brother, and all that stuff. And it looked all, that's what Facebook is. That's what it is. It's about sharing, especially with your family and your friends. I get it. But, I could not share in this National Siblings Day because I don't have siblings. I am an only child. Do you have siblings, Kevin?
I sure do.
How many?
I'm the middle, so I have an older sister and a younger brother.
So you're the middle.
I'm the middle.
Yeah. So you're Peter Brady.
Sure.
Sometimes, do you feel that you never get enough attention?
I think maybe when I was a kid, maybe, yeah. But I don't really worry about it.
They've evened that out now?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
I don't care.
Your parents came to your wedding?
Yeah, they were.
Okay, good.
They were invited,
right.
Yeah.
So, but I look at this this siblings thing, and while it's great to see all everybody with their siblings and, looking all happy and everything, there is a little emptiness, a void, because I said, I immediately became defensive, as is my way. And I was like, well, okay, I'm all for, there's a Mother's Day and a Father's Day. Granted, Mother's Day, much bigger deal than Father's Day. Might be one reason why I never had a kid. Because I already knew that my day was going to be lesser than my wife's day. And I don't know how I was going to deal with that. So you know what? I took it right out of the equation. We neither of us have a day now. We have barren day. No kids. So I see this National Siblings Day, and right away I say to myself, well, okay, that's nice. That's great. I'm not begrudging. That's fantastic. But where's the National Only Children's Day? I haven't gone online, but literally it seems to me that almost every day of the year is a day of something. Apple Pie Day, No Turn on Red Day. I mean, every day when you go online now, you see that it's today's this day. Pizza Day, Peanut Butter and Jelly Sandwich Day. Every group has picked a day and they, celebrate themselves. There's so much to the point now where it's so diluted, I don't know how important any of these days are, and I don't know how official they are. I mean, maybe I'm old school, but I still, go to the old phrase that if unless you get a day off of school, it's not a real day. If there's mail on your day, it ain't a day. No mail, no school. That's real. I have to laugh. My wife works for a company that's in a bank. And so, she gets all those bank holidays off. So she's like, oh, yeah, well, I've got next week off. I got next Tuesday off. I go, wait, what's next Tuesday? Veterans Day. I'm like, veteran? You have Veterans Day? What are you, in fourth grade? Who gets Veterans Day off? Yeah, we have Columbus Day. Columbus Day? You have Columbus Day off? We have, I'm off on Monday. Why, what's Monday? President's Day. President's Day? But it's a national holiday, and banks, for whatever reason, get off on that day. But, I mean, I'm like, wow, what a great place to work. You get all these fake holidays off. I got to think the National Siblings Day did not warrant a day off. But I was saying to myself, well, what about National Only Children's Day? So I went on my Facebook, and I said, I noticed that today is the National Siblings Day, and that's great, but I'm just wondering, where's the National Only Children's Day? Looks like I have a new cause. Wow. Did I open up a can of worms? And I got the usuals. Those of you out there who are only children, it is the cross that we bear. We have been constantly castigated by our sibling friends, pro-siblings, if you will, like Kevin over here with his brother and sister. I'm sure you fall into that cocky group who love to say, well, only children, you guys are spoiled. Every day is only Children's Day.
I thought it. I thought it.
See, I told you. Every day is only Children's Day. You get anything you want. And we've all heard it, and all only children can just as I have no clue. I have had some very close friends that I would consider brother like. I have had some very close relatives, like cousins, that I would consider sister like. But I still don't know ultimately what that emotion is, because it's clearly different than a very good friend, right?
Yeah, it is.
And but can you explain it?
Not really.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I understand. I'm sure you can. I mean, right. You just know it.
Right.
You just know it. And so I don't know what that feels like. I don't know what it's like to have that person. I have some, like I said, who I would consider, I have some friends who I consider brother-like, who I would do anything for, and hopefully they would do anything for me. And I have great affection and concern for them and would do anything for them. But it's still different. There's still that little barrier. You're not related. There's not the blood. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what ticks it over there. But there is something inherent in that DNA connection. Or disconnection between a blood relative and there's some people that say, oh, my friend, I love my friend more than my brother. People, they have better relationships with their friends and with their brothers, but they still know there's a there's a feeling, there's an emotion, there's a connection, regardless of whether you like that sibling or not, as much as you may like someone else, you can identify the relationship. There's still some intangible there. It has to be. So, and like I said, we only children, we have heard all the remarks. We have heard all the insults that have been thrown at us by all you brothers and sisters out there. And we have taken them in this. I wonder in today's bullying world, with the online bullying, what that's like. I wonder if people are actually given the only children, the only child. I didn't get it a lot, but I got it enough to the point where, it's something that I do react to. You know, I mean, yeah, I had a nice bike. I had a nicer bike than my friends did. But I didn't have a Cadillac bike. But yeah, I had a nice bike because, you know, my parents didn't have to buy 7 bikes. Now, when I grew up, especially in my neighborhood, you know, this is, you know, when I'm a little kid, I'm talking, you know, this is still when religion was a very, I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand in some areas religion is still very, important aspect of people's lives. But let's be honest. I mean, a lot of people, you know, especially when it comes to birth control, everybody sort of, you know, a la cartes what they believe in. But when I was growing up, there was still a very, very, especially among Catholics, I grew up in a Catholic, you know, neighborhood. You know, there was still a thing where the Pope says no birth control. So I was surrounded by a lot of families with 5 kids, 6 kids. There was one family in my school that had 13 kids. Yeah, I mean, the poor mother. We never saw her. Never saw her. But saw her kids everywhere.
Right.
She was never out of the hospital. So, I mean, I was surrounded by all my friends had at least one brother, if not more, or sister, sibling. But I did have a couple of only, I had a couple friends that were only children. But for the most part, most of all my friends, and especially went to high school then, you know, 5, 6. I mean, like I said, we were in that era where, you know, people were still, sort of abiding by the Catholic dictates of no birth control. And so you just sort of played it by ear. I don't know how much the ear played into it, but I always thought it was interesting. So I was getting all these comments, you know, every day's only children day and you guys, you don't need your own day. You know, you've got enough in your life. And like I said, yeah, you know, we went on nice vacations. I'll admit that. We didn't go to, you know, Six Flags in St. Louis. I went on a cruise when I was 12. You know, which is probably one reason why I really like to travel now. But we went through some really cool vacations. You know, yeah, I mean, you know, we went to dinner with my mom and dad, like on a Sunday or something like that. We went to a nicer restaurant. Yeah, you know. But it doesn't mean I never felt like I was flaunting it. But that was my reality. You know, I'm sorry. I don't understand. I guess I understand to some extent because if you're a little kid, you're going, oh, look at this guy. He gets to do that. He gets to go there. He gets this. He gets that. And if you had a big family back in those days, especially when, you know, there was one person working. So, there, you know, things were a lot tighter. And so I can understand some jealousy that goes on with any, you know, young kids. But I always, as I got older, I felt, and I used to say to people, I don't understand why I'm being ridiculed because my parents, showed a little restraint and either used birth control or could read a calendar and could figure out the rhythm method better than yours because your parents kept having babies. And now Kevin looks at me strange. Do you know what the rhythm method
is?
No,
I've never heard of that.
Never heard of the rhythm method?
No.
Interesting. Okay, the rhythm, this was in the Catholic faith. I mean, that the rhythm method was that you are not supposed to use birth control, you know. The rhythm method is based on the woman's cycle. So you're supposed to say, okay, you know, if the woman is going to, you know, have her be visited by her friend on this date, you know, these are supposedly the most fertile days, sure. And you are supposed to abstain from sex during those days. So the rhythm was that there is the rhythm of this every month. You know, this is the days that you're not supposed to have sex. Obviously, that's why a lot of Catholic families had a lot of kids, because they weren't using birth control. And while they may have had the day marked on the calendar, when the spirit strikes, you're not thinking about what day it is on the calendar. So I don't know. Either my mom and dad knew how to use a calendar and a little restraint, or the withdrawal method. But, you know, one shot did it. And other folks had to keep going back to the well several times. I don't know. But I'm not sure. I don't know why. I got picked on because my mom and dad either knew how to do the rhythm method or use birth control or whatever they did, but they only had one. And so I was saying to myself after I saw this, you know, and it wasn't a ton of responses, but there was enough. And they were all negative about, yeah, well, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, the poor only child out there, as the only child sits there in his or her own room with the nice stereo and the really nice bed and the really nice linens.
Sounds terrible.
And all the games that they want and every doll and every G.I. Joe and every matchbook car. As we sat alone, I mean, here's the thing, you know, and we dealt with our fate. I mean, the fact of the matter was, I was saying, you know, it would be interesting if someone even floated that idea. There would be like a major attack, because there still is. Now, I think there are more. I mean, there are certainly smaller families than there used to be. Now, if you have three kids, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, many families had at least three, if not six. I mean, it was somewhere in the middle. It was always a bigger family. Today, three is a lot. One is not as crazy as it used to be. And two seems to be the norm. I always think it's funny when you see, you know, like a family that has like six girls. You know that the dad was like, all right, look, we're going to try this one more time. I want to get that boy. You know, after three, he's like, okay, you got three girls. Okay, I'll give you one more here. And then girl number four comes by and goes, okay, I'm sorry, but we got to do this one more time. I got to get my boy. And then after girl six, they usually go, all right, look, I'm not shooting any X's and Y's here, so we're done. But it's when I see like a family of six girls, I always wonder if the father was like, okay, let's just give this one more chance here for that boy. But I don't think that only children are as odd as they used to be. In fact, I remember one time I came home from when I was like in first or second grade. We were talking about brothers, you know, like families. One day at school, I must have come back and said, oh, we were talking about families or something. And my mom was like, are there any other only children at school? I mean, that was like a big deal. It was odd. It was not the norm at all. And like I said, today, an only child is not as strange, especially because you've got, you know, expenses-wise, it's much more expensive to raise one child, more or less three or four, in today's world. Secondly, there are birth control methods. So if you don't want to have 58 kids, you don't have to. As I said, the impact of religion is less today. So if you're not bound by those kind of rules in your life, then you will just maybe have one child as opposed to having many, whether by design or by accident. And the other side of the coin is that a lot of people are older now when they're getting married. And so many times, you know, women have had long careers. And they may have gotten married in their mid-30s, and they continue their careers. And so then in time, they get pregnant maybe later in life in their late 30s or sometimes early 40s, and then that's all they have. They have the one child. So it's not as an odd thing anymore to be an only child. So I'm just wondering if the stigma of the only child that I experienced still exists. Now, clearly, on my Facebook, There was clearly it wasn't a stigma as much as it was just the jealousy, and I heard all the, you know, every day is only Child's Day. But I just felt like I have no problems with Siblings Day, but then there's a good group of us out there. And I wonder if there's a growing group of us out there who are only children. And it is a different, like I said, I had a nicer bike, or we went on nice vacations, or I went to a nicer restaurant and things like that. The other side of the coin is, it's not a lonely existence, but it is different. I mean, for instance, when I would be out playing with my friends, and it was time, especially when you're a little kid, and this is before the play date and all that stuff, you know, you get done and okay, it's dinner time and, you know, then you're in for the night. I was alone. If you went home to a bigger family, you got your brothers and sisters there. You guys could say it's summer. There's no homework or anything. You guys could still play games. You could go out maybe in your yard. Maybe you can't go out, but you can play in your yard. Maybe you can still play catch with your brother or your sister or do something with them or play some games or do something. You know, I basically went back to my room. I either was with my mom and dad. We'd be watching television or doing something. Or I just went to my room and had to find ways to occupy myself. I do find that most only children, out of necessity, I have no problems being alone because I was alone quite a bit. And I know people that come from big families and they can't be alone. They need people around them because they have always had people around them. So I could be alone, by myself and be perfectly content, no anxiety, because I had to find ways to occupy myself. That's one reason why I got into music and got into television, and I got into, like, I used to like to do puzzles and stuff because I had to find ways to occupy myself. I used to listen to the radio and got really into music and got into albums and read all the stuff about them and read books about it and all the stuff in TV and watched different stuff and things like that because I needed to find an outlet to keep myself, entertained because I didn't have that somebody to go and wrestle with after dinner or, you know, punch in the face or scream at. I didn't have that, you know. So I think older children are always a little more mature for their age because they are usually around adults more. Once again, my peer group at home was not my younger brother or younger sister. It was my mom and dad. And so I was emulating more of their behavior because that's all that was around me at home. Whereas if I had brothers and sisters, I probably would be more of a kid for a longer period of time because I'd be playing around or be surrounded by kids. I'd be sharing a room with them. I'd be sharing a bathroom. I'd be going to school, walking to school with them. I'd be having more time, whereas I went to school by myself, you know, and I came home by myself. And was I, when I, after I got done playing with my friends, I was at home from 6 o'clock till the next day by myself trying to find a way to occupy my time, whether it was school or whatever, you know, sports, things like that. I mean, you know, I talk about, you know, even from this standpoint of doing stuff on the radio. When I was a kid, I used to collect baseball and hockey cards were my two main, sports cards. Wasn't really into football cards and never really into basketball cards as much. Baseball and hockey. And I used to go and I would go in the bathroom where there was some nice echo. And I would take the newspaper, and I would read the standings out loud in the bathroom like I was on the radio or on television. So today, and it would echo like it was like in a studio or something. And that was kind of what I would, you know. So everybody says, geez, how'd you get started? I've been doing this since I was a little kid, you know, talking to myself half the time. And I could be talking to myself right now for all I know. But that grew out of being an only child and just sort of trying to find different ways to occupy myself. It's not a bad existence. So if there's any parents out there, young parents, you're wondering, you know, geez, because you always say, oh, I would, you know, I want to have at least one, two kids so they could, you know, let's be honest. A lot of times brothers and sisters don't get along. There's no guarantees that they're going to be buddies for life. You want them to be. So I'm just telling you is that, A, I don't know if an only child day can exist, because maybe every day is only child day. Maybe they're right. Maybe I'm just offensive. But this it brought up the idea of the siblings. And like I said, I do see some families that are very tight knit that the siblings do get along, and I do long for that. And I've always said many times, because I didn't have any brothers or sisters, I really put a premium on my friendships. Some people have tons of friends, and they vary in the degrees because, once again, if you are a kid that had three or four or five brothers and sisters, you always had people around you. So you're used to, you know, interacting with a lot of people, and some you have more in common with and some you don't. In my case, I've always said, I'm sure I never sat down with a therapist, but if I did, who knows what would come out. Probably scare the hell out of them. But I've always felt in some ways I was always kind of searching for that brother in terms of my friends. So I've always put a high premium on the people I would consider good friends, because in a way they are, in my view, they do become extended members of my family. I do try to find, as I was saying to Kevin earlier, that relationship. But I've also noticed, as good of a friend as I've been with people, I'm still not their brother or their sister. And there is that, okay, wait a minute. You know, I like you, but whoa. It's not like you're my brother, you know? And so maybe I've come on too strong because I've really wanted, you know, that extra connection. And they already have that connection with their brothers and sisters. They don't need any more. They don't need another brother or sister. But I didn't have any. So I'm always kind of looking for that brother or sister out there sometimes. And so I do put a premium on my friends, and maybe sometimes I've even been, you know, over-critical because they maybe have not lived up to my expectation, because I really do cherish and really do put a premium on friendships because they are that extension or maybe that seeking of a sibling. So what I'm trying to say is that if you are thinking about, if you're a younger couple and you're thinking about having kids, or if you already have, you're past your childbearing time and you've only had one, and I wish I would have had more. First of all, I don't know any. Most of the time, I don't know any only children. I've spoken to many of them. We don't. We're not sad that we didn't have a brother or sister. It's not like, but there is a part of it that we wonder what it would be like. But I think most of us have enjoyed our life, just because if you had hopefully a good upbringing, you probably did have some nice perks. And so there were some nice things that offset the fact that you didn't have that other side, that relationship that is special, that is unique to a sibling. So I guess it's a trade-off, but I wouldn't, if you only have one kid, don't feel bad, because the only child, as I said, I think, always finds ways to have a very fulfilling life without having brothers or sisters, in that they're always, at least I think, because we grew up around our parents, we've always been a little mature, we've always been a little more goal-oriented, we always have done pretty well in school because, you know, you're the only one there, so the attention is always on you, you know. And for instance, Kevin, you're in the middle kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with grades, like when you went to school,
yeah.
Did it, like, were you a good student?
I was all right. I got by without trying too hard. So
yeah, but my point is, like, so what, like, was it a, like when report card day came, was that a big day in the house?
Not as much. I mean, yeah, it was, but yeah.
I mean, was there like a sibling rival? Like, who did?
I think my sister always, she was the oldest one, and she always did best. She was, you know, the bookworm. My brother probably needed the most assistance,
and
so.
he was the younger,
the
one.
Youngest.
Yeah. Well, see,
it's interesting,
and that, yeah, because and it's funny that you said that your firstborn, mm-hmm, sister was the most.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
big time.
And it just seems like, you know, if whether you're an only child or a firstborn, You for a while, you're the only one there, and the attention is there, and I think that is instilled in you, whether it's obvious or even if it's just kind of, you know, expected. And so, yeah, I mean, the only child, you know, as I said, it's an interesting, it's definitely different, but I don't think only children themselves feel like, oh, geez, there is that part of me that wonders. But at the same time, I'm also very happy in my own skin, And as I said, I'm appreciative of the little perks that I may have had. As I said, I'm pretty sure that I love to travel. And since I've been married, my wife and I have traveled around the world. And we have the ability because we don't have any children. Now, that's another side of the coin that I've never thought of particularly, but my wife is an only child, and I'm an only child. Now, she has some stepbrothers and sisters, but she never really sees them very much. Her parents divorced very early when she was a little kid, and she wasn't with them. So they're there, and she's been with them a few times, but there's not like they grew up together in any way that she would remember. She was a very small kid. So she considers herself an only child in many ways in terms of her upbringing, because that's what she was, and I certainly was. And so, you know, once again, without having all these kids around, you know, the idea of having children is something that I've always wondered about, but I never had a burning desire to have. And once again, it has opened up our lives in that, yeah, you know, personally, you know, I mean, I'm not going to have the chance to walk my daughter down the aisle, and I'm not going to have a chance to see my son hit the grand slam to win the game. Those are emotions and experiences that I will never have, and can't even, once again, even I don't understand the father child emotion. I have a godson who I'm very close to, and I love him with all my heart, but he's still not my kid. And we have a great relationship, but he's still not my child. And so I don't know, once again, there's that relationship that is just instinctual. The other side of the coin is not having children has given my wife and I a very nice lifestyle. We've been able to travel quite a bit and see things and go places and do things and have, you know, disposable income to do, you know, go to shows or go to this and do whatever you want. I mean, I've been to 168 Elton John concerts, okay? If I had three kids, I don't think I would have been able to go to 168 Elton John concerts in my life. So, once again, there's a trade-off there. So who knows? If maybe being an only, both of us being only children played a role in us not having any. I don't know. But I just want you to know, A, you siblings, you guys, you know, the thing is that you're all I'm going to get back to ranting again. I just got all, you know, serious and philosophical. But I'm going to get back to this. So, you know, you guys are all, oh yeah, you only children. But then when it was National Siblings Day, you guys were all proud of your siblings, and we all took pictures with my brother and my sister. So just yeah, I may have had a nicer bike and I may have gone on nicer vacations. But I don't have a brother or sister to call or to lean on, or to look in their eyes and to have that connection. So you know what? Be grateful you have siblings, just as I'm happy and grateful that I was an only child. The fact is, there's no need to be jealous of me, because believe me, in many ways, I've been jealous of you. And that wraps up another Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com every Monday. A new episode at WGNplus.com. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I had a good time today. I hope you did too. Come back often, because this is the only podcast that goes from the end of the web to your screen.